And now, to take us into our message today, we have a special video that is absolutely on topic. And it's fun, too. Enjoy.
I walk this plankton in a sanctum. Got out of Dodge, sailed on a fineless bon voyage. You said no, I headed south, tossed overboard. Good Lord, that's a really large mouth. I'm sleeping with fishes here in the belly of a whale. Exit whale's digestion. It would behoove me to be he. Shot up like a human comet.
Eric, you might not want to rhyme with comet.
I'm sleeping with fishes here in the belly of a whale. I'm highly nutritious here.
Well, as I said, that video I thought was fun and definitely on topic for what we're talking about today. And you know I like to tell jokes, and I actually had about 10 jokes about being tossed into the sea, but I thought that would be going a bit overboard. So I'm not going to share those. Today we're going to take a look at one of the more familiar stories in the Hebrew Scriptures, and this is the story of Jonah. The entire book of Jonah consists of 4 short chapters, and it is so filled with multiple lessons and meanings. I invite you to take the time to read it. It is rich in cultural and political perspectives, and it is chock filled with metaphysics that apply to each and every one of us. It is debated, of course, as to whether or not the events really ever could have happened. Biblical literalists, of course, argue that it did happen exactly as it was written. But most biblical scholars, including Jewish theologians, would regard it as midrash, meaning it never really happened, but it is held in high regard for the lessons that it offers. This story remains very high in Jewish tradition and is frequently read as part of a tradition at Jewish services. It's included in the readings on Yom Kippur as a reminder of God's loving capacity to forgive. And very interestingly, this story is also told in the Quran. So let's start with a summary of the story. One day, the Lord comes to Jonah and tells him to travel to Nineveh, the capital of Assyria, and deliver the message that they need to change their ways, or God will bring destruction to them and to their city. Now, immediately we have to stop and absorb an important lesson. Jonah is regarded as one of the prophets in the Hebrew scriptures, and we tend to picture the prophets as gung-ho, go-God people, right? Who have their act entirely together. But this isn't the character of Jonah. As all of us probably can relate to, Jonah is quite comfy with his life and wants nothing to do with getting off of his hind end, especially in the service of the lowlifes that live in Nineveh. And by the way, if you ever have a nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach or a nagging thought in your head that maybe something is yours to do, there's no need to pray and ask God for a sign, for confirmation. That nagging thought in your head or that feeling in your gut is your sign. So Jonah wants absolutely nothing to do with this mission and sets out to avoid it. And basically, if Nineveh is up north this way, Jonah heads south that way towards Tarshish. And geographically, Nineveh is about 500 miles from where Jonah was, and Tarshish is 2,000 miles, basically in the opposite direction. It's like if you're supposed to go to Indianapolis, and you say, no, I don't think so, I'm going to go to Los Angeles instead. Clearly, Jonah is resisting what he has been asked to do, and his intent is running away and hiding from God. And so to start his journey of escape, he heads down to Joppa, where conveniently there is a ship scheduled to sail to Tarshish. He boards the ship to begin his journey away from the presence of the Lord. But once the ship is at sea, a major storm erupts and begins tossing the ship every which way. Meanwhile, Jonah had gone down to the hold of the ship and was fast asleep. So the captain of the ship comes to him, wakes him up, and says, "What are you doing sleeping?" He asks Jonah to pray to his God that he might do something to save them. The crew then draws lots to try to figure out just who might be responsible for the mess that they're in. And it points to Jonah. So they come to him and they ask, "Who are you and where do you come from?" And Jonah openly shares with them that he is a Hebrew and he worships the Lord, the God of heaven, the maker of the land and sea. And the men then are even more frightened because they get it. They understand that Jonah is attempting to flee from the presence of the Lord, to create space, to create separation between himself and his God. And then something really insightful happens in the story. Jonah acknowledges to them that he is responsible for the entire mess and tells them to throw him overboard if they want everything to calm down. Now, why Jonah just didn't take a running jump over the side of the boat into the water, I don't know. But he didn't. But there's a lesson here. When things start to go south in our lives, and we are feeling overwhelmed by the turmoil, deep down inside, don't we have a knowing that all of the mitzagash, all of the garbage, all of the trouble, all the inner torment that we are experiencing is because we have tried to go it alone and separate ourselves from that one power, that one source, that loving presence in our lives? And I really do want to make a distinction here, because I'm not suggesting or arguing that every horrible thing that goes on in our lives we have brought upon ourselves. That's silly. There is so much that goes on that's random and beyond our control. However, when things go bad, when awful things start to happen, where we are on that broad spectrum of absolute inner hell on the one hand and deep inner peace on the other is very much related to how we are connected to or feeling separate from spirit. And invariably, when we decide to try to distance ourselves from God, there always is a boat going to Tarshish, and always there's room for one more passenger. Tarshish represents that cold, hard, calculating, intellectual part of us. It's a place to try to escape in order to avoid our intuitive feeling side of things. Well, the ship's crew, they hear what Jonah is saying, but they still try to right the ship and row back to land, but the storm just gets worse and worse. So reluctantly, they toss Jonah overboard, down into the sea, where he is swallowed up by a large fish. And immediately, the storm calms down. Jonah spends 3 days in the belly of the fish. 3 days. Why does that sound so familiar? And while he's there, he prays. And through his prayers, he comes to understand, he comes to realize all that the Lord has done for him. And so his prayer becomes a psalm of thanksgiving. How appropriate that our daily word is thankful. His prayer becomes a psalm of thanksgiving, and he doesn't pray to God to rescue him from the mess that he's in, but rather it's in grateful affirmation of the reality of God in his life. And in response, the Lord speaks to the fish, causing him to spit Jonah out upon the dry land. And just a little sidebar here, and then the fish goes off and tells all of his friends, oh, you should see the one that got away. But once again, the Lord comes to Jonah and tells him to go to Nineveh and deliver his message. Jonah is still reluctant, but this time he goes. It takes him a day's walk to get there and 3 days to walk through the city delivering the message. And then, surprisingly, the people of the city listen and the lesson gets through. And they have a change of heart, a change of thought. And even the king gets on board with it all, and they actually change their ways. And as a result, the city is spared. Well, when Jonah learns that the city is not to be destroyed after all, he's not a happy camper. He has kind of a hissy fit about it, goes into a snit about it, and makes no bones about complaining to the Lord about his decision. And at first, the Lord's empathetic and grows a bush to comfort Jonah. But Jonah is way too content sitting there comfortably brooding. So the Lord sends a worm to to destroy the bush, making Jonah exposed to the sun. Jonah then plays the martyr card, saying, you know what? It's better for me to die than to live. God rebukes Jonah, in effect saying, hey, everything isn't about you. This isn't about you. There are 120,000 people in Nineveh who are struggling, not knowing their right from their left. Let's pause and reflect on this for a moment. In his words to Jonah, God is making a distinction. Jonah's all worked up because he cannot believe that Nineveh is spared. After all of the inconvenience that he had to suffer, he is very unhappy with the way things ended up. In his head, he had written a different ending to the story. As far as he was concerned, the people of Nineveh were not worth being spared. Anybody here ever been in that place? Good Lord, I've done everything I was asked, at least as far as I can see. Why didn't this turn out the way I was expecting? I did my part. Why didn't you do yours? I broke my butt at this job for 35 years. How could they have laid me off? I ate all of the right food and I exercised every day. What do you mean I have cancer? I put everything I have into this relationship. What do you mean you want out? I never cheated anybody out of a nickel. Why can't I get a break financially? Everyone reading the story thinks that the people of Nineveh were horribly evil. But the words of the story really tell us something different. According to God, they were a people who did not know their right from their left. In other words, they were a people who had not yet arrived at a higher spiritual consciousness. But God looked at them and saw worth. Looking at the story from a historical cultural view, biblical scholars suggest the author probably wrote the story in the spirit of political criticism, and that the events of the story intentionally were far-fetched to make a point. The story was written after the Babylonian exile, after Ezra restored the law, and very likely it was a bit of a golden age for the Jews. The story attacks a prejudice, a narrow Jewish nationalism that was characteristic of this time, a time that emphasized Jewish exclusivity. So Jonah, like most of the Jews of the day, could not have cared less and probably even hated the idea of salvation for the Gentiles. Does this bear any resemblance to what goes on in our world and in our country today? Is this the mentality, the underlying mentality, the attitude that led to the Holocaust and the extermination of over 6 million Jews and virtual elimination of the gypsy nationality? Is this the arrogance that gave a green light to separate children from parents who were would-be immigrants? Is this the underlying apathy that tolerates the daily shootings on the south and west sides of Chicago with nothing more than a shrug or a comment of, gee, that's too bad? Is there a call, a figurative summons of sort, for us to journey to Nineveh and deliver a prophetic message? And if we're hearing such a call, are we embracing it or are we running from it? On a metaphysical level, We all have been in Jonah's shoes. On a personal, individual level, we all are called upon to make the trip to that Nineveh within. How many times have you had the experience of knowing what was the right thing, the loving thing to do, only to go in the opposite direction because you were tired or lazy or afraid? How many times have you gone in an opposite direction to where you were being called out of a sense of privilege or arrogance? I have a friend, one of my tennis buddies, who was constantly complaining about his wife, his marriage. Every single week, I'm not exaggerating, this went on for over a year. And one day I asked him, have you ever thought about counseling? And he answered, ah, she would never go along with counseling. And I told him, I wasn't talking about her, I was talking about you. And he said, me? And as softly and gently as I could, I just said, you know what? If you're upset, if you think if she can't change or won't change, you can't call the police or the fire department. The only person left in this equation who is empowered to do something is you. Your Nineveh is whatever pulls you out of your comfort zone. Your Nineveh is that place, whether it's physical, emotional, spiritual, or whatever. That place that you just don't want to go. Your Nineveh is your stubbornness that says, what is, and I'm staying put. Your Nineveh is the people who have hurt you deeply. And God says, go and forgive those people and give them my message of love. Your Nineveh is danger or discomfort, anything that you may hate or dislike, but God cherishes deeply. Your Nineveh is any part of you that you don't feel good about, any part of you inside that you feel is lacking or not worthy, any part of you that has not yet learned the difference between your left and your right. There's another really fascinating aspect to the story. In four instances, Jonah goes down or into. He goes down to the city of Joppa. He goes down to the hold of the ship and goes to sleep. He goes down into the sea. And he goes down into the belly of the fish. And just as going up represents a higher consciousness, going down represents embracing a lower, baser consciousness. And yes, we can decide to go there and reside. A higher consciousness is a gift. Having a higher consciousness, knowing better, and pretending otherwise is a tragedy. Yet we often do it if it makes life easier, more convenient, or less frightening. If we do, though, just like Jonah, we shouldn't be surprised when all heck breaks loose. We should own it as Jonah did. We also know that when this is going on in our lives, it very often affects those around us, much like the sailors aboard that ship had to endure because of Jonah. Our storms, unfortunately, often pour rain on people near and dear to us and onto countless others that we may not even be aware of. How we show up and what we do affects and influences others much more than we realize, because we are universally bound to one another. I'll give you an exaggerated example. Think about the children throughout the world who die from hunger every year because our governments refuse to go to Nineveh. Think about the children in the family, where their parents are constantly at one another's throats, and the turmoil those kids know as a result of this life experience. And what about the fish? Well, you know, going back to my tennis friend, a short time after I suggested counseling to him, he became very sick and had to have emergency surgery. Ironically, after the surgery, he spent 3 days, there's that number again, 3 days in the hospital recovering. And when he got out, he shared that during that time, he was grateful to be alive and that he had come to realize that it was time for him to do whatever it was that he needed to do with regard to his job, his marriage, and in life. See, there's something really important here to understand. God did not arrange for Jonah to be swallowed up by a large fish as a punishment. Like a child needs sometimes, Jonah needed a timeout. All of us at times need a timeout. A time to refocus. A time to appreciate that our peace, joy, and happiness lies in surrender to that which we have been called and the honoring of our sacred contracts. Jonah's story holds a very deep personal message for us. We all know that the earth revolves around the sun, but if we listen to our heads, we all have a tendency to think that the world revolves around us. And that really is not a horrible thing. It just is. It's part of our survival mode. When something comes to us, very often our reactions are almost reflexive. How does this relate to me? How does this affect me? Is this a threat to me? And my favorite, what's in it for me? But really, again, none of this is bad. This is exactly the place where Jonah was before the Lord came along and prodded him. But without exception, we all are called at one time or another. And the most difficult place for us to travel to in response to that call is the Nineveh that lies deep within us. That place that spiritually has yet to learn its right from its left. That place that is mired in an old consciousness that no longer serves us and just weighs us down. But it's also a place of great worth, a place of greater capacity to love, a place there's room for unlimited possibilities, a place where there's space for growth and the realizing and the experience of new life. So now I invite you. Together, let's go now into the belly of that great fish. Take a time out and pray a prayer of thanksgiving for all that we are, all that we have. And confront the question, what is ours to do? And we take this now into prayer and meditation.